Welcome to That Entrepreneur Life, a podcast about entrepreneurship that takes you from idea to launch and beyond. Each week, your hosts, Andrew Lees and Clint McPherson, discuss different business topics aimed at adding value to any entrepreneur's journey.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of That Entrepreneur Life. I'm Andrew Lees, and normally I have Clint McPherson on the show. Today, I will be flying solo, though. I've got a very special guest on the show today. He's a communications expert who's helped people get six-figure book advances and get on shows like Ellen and Dr. Oz. He's featured in publications such as Forbes and Fortune, and he's a VIP contributor to Entrepreneur Mag. But before I introduce our special guest today, I want to remind you to subscribe to our podcast and to our mailing list through our website so you don't miss out on all the free resources we have to help you start and grow your business. With that said, I'd like to welcome our guest, Neil Gordon, to the show. How are you doing today, man?
Good to be here, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Yeah, really excited to have you. I'm excited to dig into, you know, what you do and how you help entrepreneurs communicate with the world. I think it's a little, I think we kind of take it for granted sometimes, you know, communication kind of gets swept under the rug a little bit. Like we're, you know, it's not something that a lot of people tend to focus on. There's a lot of other things to kind of consider in your business, creating a good product or service and figuring out how to market it. But like communication from start to finish is so massively important. And something that we all really need to be much better at, I think. So excited to dig into it with you.
I am as well.
Cool. So Neil, can you take us back to when your entrepreneurial journey started and what is it about entrepreneurship that really gets you fired up?
You know, it's funny, Andrew, when I technically started my entrepreneurial journey, it was just because I left my low-level editing job at Penguin, the book publishing company, back in the late 2000s. And you could say that I started then because I wasn't working for anyone else. I was working for myself, but really I was just a freelancer scraping by, and I became an entrepreneur just because I didn't want to be working for a company anymore. And that to me, as I've worked in this world for a number of years now, I've realized that that's not really what makes an entrepreneur. It's more a matter of deciding that you want to solve a problem, and entrepreneurship just winds up being the best way to do it. Trying to solve a pretty big problem at a company is kind of difficult, but if you just create it on your own, you don't have a ceiling anymore. Mm-hmm. You just get creative in how you solve the puzzles of your business, and you just grow it and grow it and grow it in any way you can. Yeah. And that journey didn't start until 2017, I would say, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. So basically, I had been struggling as a freelancer. I hadn't ever figured out marketing or how to attract people deliberately to my work. Okay. It got so bad that I wound up moonlighting for Lyft, just driving people around.
Yeah.
And because I'm a communication and messaging guy, like having really insightful conversation.
I bet.
When somebody had like, what are you doing driving for Lyft? It was like that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, I'm working on it.
Right. Yeah. It was just kind of funny to talk about some of the things that we'll talk about today. It's just like people have these like mind-blowing conversations.
Yeah.
And it was just like I remember one passenger was in a really rotten mood when I picked him up. And by the end, he was just so excited. He was a commercial photographer. He was so excited about understanding his work in a way he hadn't before.
Yeah.
And he walked out and I looked at him as he was leaving my car and going to his apartment. And he just kind of looked back at me with this kind of quizzical but delighted look on his face.
Like, who is this guy?
Why did I just get a 20-minute ride from him where I now completely understand my own world in a totally different way? Anyway, that's I got a really nice review from him the next day. It was kind of funny.
That's awesome.
Anyway,
I wonder if he thought he was on like a hidden camera show or something. Like, you know, hey, where are the cameras? What's going on? You know. Like, cause you wouldn't expect that from a typical Lyft ride.
No, you wouldn't. But I admittedly had some real confidence issues at that point. And then I figured out that public speakers would be a really good audience for my particular skills around messaging and content. And so I had already invested like almost 2 years prior in like a very costly funnel building webinar based funnel kind of thing. And I just said, I just fired myself from Lyft from a really bad experience. That I was in LA at the time at the Hollywood Bowl. It was gridlocked for 20 minutes. I said, forget it. I'm not doing this. And I went home. I took the weekend off and came and worked on my funnel full time. And a week later it was up and running. Like it just, I never would have known how close I was. And it worked instantaneously. And I started earning five figures a month, like instantaneously.
Oh, and, wow.
And haven't looked back. I certainly haven't driven for Lyft since. And so now I've just been dealing with the trials and tribulations of entrepreneurship in earnest. But that's really the origin story, was that day I fired myself from driving.
That's incredible. So what was it, do you think, that really shifted maybe in your mindset and then also in your strategy too? Because you built this funnel, which, you know, for those people who don't know, sales funnel is just working, is just a way to get people from discovery of your product, usually from the starting point is a landing page or maybe some piece of content or ad that gets you to the landing page.
Right.
And then it works you through to educate you about how you can help them, and how you can help the customer, and then the customer makes a purchase, you can upsell, all these things. But what was it mindset wise and maybe strategically that really shifted for you at that time?
Mindset, Andrew, was simply sitting there gridlocked in my car, not able to go and pick up other fares because I was in such a ridiculous situation. I was just like, no, this is just a hell no to my entire life. I am not allowing my life to be this anymore. It's just like, forget it. Just forget it. I don't even care what happens after this. I just can't do this again.
Yeah.
And so I just, like I said, I fired myself, got some takeout, hung out all weekend, just vegged, and then got to work.
Nothing like LA traffic to get you to really think about your life in one way or the other, you know?
We could probably have a whole compilation of essay type book on people whose lives changed because of LA traffic.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like the rush hours. I still can't believe, I heard recently that LA is back to the level of traffic it was pre-pandemic. Yeah. And like, these are people who are spending 2 hours to drive like 10 miles. It's ridiculous.
It's wild. Yeah. It's absolutely crazy. And I think then you get that in New York too, you get pretty bad traffic. But I think people are a little bit more aggressive, maybe tend to get there. I would say they get there a little faster, but they're more aggressive in LA. I feel like people are just like, screw it. I'm going to chill. I'm going to just, you know, whatever, the weather's okay. But like, even if you're relaxed and calm and, you know, maybe even smoking something, I don't know. It's like, you still, like, that's still such a rough, you know, commute, such a rough way to live every day, you know, commuting those kind of distances and getting just stuck in that kind of traffic. So it gives you a lot of time to think.
Especially when you have to do the driving yourself. If it was a self-driving thing and you could just read a book or something, that might not be as bad. But
exactly.
But
Well, that's cool.
We can't ever minimize the significance of mindset when it comes to entrepreneurship too, Andrew. I
mean, sure. Really,
I was a week away from changing my life, and then the only thing that's standing in my way was what was going on between my two ears.
So that's incredible to think that it can really change that fast. Because when you first, you know, told me about how you fired yourself from Lyft, you took some time to think, and you got your funnel, your sales funnel up and running. Within a week, you were making money, and very quickly you're making five figures a month. That's it's incredible to think that, like, there's no such thing as overnight success. So, you know, we're not going to, you know, create something the next day or next week. It really, things don't typically tend to happen that fast. And even for you, there was probably a lot leading up to that. So even though it happened relatively quickly from when you started that funnel, you know, even though that success happened pretty quickly, it was years in the making.
It was 10 years of toiling away and trying to figure out my messaging and what my value was, and it just came together.
Yeah. So what was the, mind me asking, what the strategy was that really clicked for you?
Well, I was using someone else's model for the funnel. And as you very concisely explained it to our listeners, starting with a Facebook ad, leading to a landing page. I had an automated webinar that just taught them over 45 minutes a different way of approaching their public speaking. And then signing up the call to action at the end was to just sign up for a strategy call or discovery call with me.
Yeah.
And as a general rule of thumb, if you're selling something for a relatively higher amount of money, a service that's thousands of dollars, you might spend $100, $150, even $200 in Facebook ads to get a single person on the phone. Mm-hmm. And if you close one out of four people and you spent maybe $600 to close a one person, but you're charging them $2,000, $3,000, $5,000, that's a really good investment of money. But honestly, Andrew, I was getting people on the phone, not for $100 or $150, but for like $35.
Wow.
The funnel was that effective.
Right? That's incredible. Yeah. Cause usually it does take that, you know, usually if you're getting a 3 to 5 times return on investment, so, you know, you're putting in 100, you're getting $300 to $500 out. That's actually incredible. But it sounds like you were doing much, much better than that.
Yeah. I mean, I was doing really well with the amount of Facebook ad expenditure to get someone on the phone. What I was doing less good at, because again, mindset issues, I didn't have confidence. I had just come from driving. So I was charging very little money.
Yeah.
But I was also paying very little money, and it just took very incremental building up of some momentum to feel aligned with higher fees. And so I was very much about incremental growth in that regard.
Yeah.
And so and the original question you asked was what strategically wound up being the game changer. And there's a larger messaging strategy that I imagine we'll discuss during our time together today. Mm-hmm. But a specific thing that I became absolutely religious around, which affected my Facebook ads and also affected the execution of the webinar that converted so many people, I was absolutely religious about understanding the problem as my audience experienced it.
Yeah.
And that's a very important thing for our listeners to understand, is that many of us talk about our content and our offers from our perspective, from our expertise.
Yeah.
But people are most likely to embrace our solutions when it's provided within the context of a problem they care about solving.
Yeah.
In the case of the public speaker, it's getting up on stage, seeing everyone bored out of their minds and zoning out on their phones and feeling like a complete and total fraud, imposter.
Yep.
And that was the problem that people really wanted help solving. And that's what compelled them to get on a call with me.
That's awesome. So before that, before you kind of figure that out, were you maybe addressing or trying to solve a different problem? Even if it was similar, were you maybe... did you have a solution to a problem that maybe people didn't have, as, or was it that you weren't kind of presenting it in a way that connected with, you know, with their sort of emotion around the problem? You know, because I've noticed that with my businesses, I think, you know, I've got a I do product development consulting for if you want to launch a product, if you want to sell it online, kind of anywhere. I help you develop the product, whether it's a physical product, mobile app, and I help with the launch strategy part of it. Mm-hmm. But some people don't want, they're like I'm trying to, one of the things in marketing is in-depth market research and business modeling. Yeah. There's a lot of people who are like, I know they need it. You know, even after talking to them, they think they've already done a good enough job with it. I know they need it, but they don't really want it. And I can't force it on them. But they need something else. And I need to make sure that I'm meeting them where they have a problem and making sure that I'm solving that. So sometimes there's a little bit of a mismatch. And it's not just that I'm not communicating it well. It's that I'm not necessarily always solving the exact right problem that they have.
Yeah. And that's a really good point to make, Andrew, because often as entrepreneurs, what we're struggling with is understanding the depth of the problem in a way that our target audience does not. Mm-hmm. And that there needs to be some kind of education, which is why longer form content like a video sales letter or a webinar or something like that winds up being useful, and that you can indoctrinate them into a new way of solving the problem, a different way of doing things. But whether it's in a webinar or it's giving a speech or it's writing a book or whatever it is, I encourage my followers to, again, be religious about the problem as the audience member understands it themselves, and then transition them into that education from there, so that they don't want in-depth product development, your folks, right? But what they do want is market penetration. What they want are early customers. They want momentum. Mm-hmm. They want to stand out. They want to know that a year and a half of developing their product isn't going to go up in flames because they can't get any early traction when upon launching.
Yeah.
And so the problem, as they might understand it, is you've put a year and a half into developing this product. You've tested it. You've gotten good reviews from early users.
Yeah. But
then you finally launch it into the market and you put it out there and you hear crickets.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't get any traction.
So much. Yeah.
Right. They can I'm sure they can understand that. I'm sure they understand the significance of putting all of that time and effort and resources into putting something together for it to completely fall on deaf ears.
Yeah.
And so that's the thing that you start with and you agitate for them. And then you could then gradually move in. Here's the reason why it's so hard to penetrate the market. And then you bring in your expertise and you re-diagnose the problem as you understand it.
Yeah.
Providing your services the solution.
Exactly. And connect with them in a way that they really understand it. And for you, there's like a real emotional thing that you're connecting with your customers, I feel like, because especially with the public speaking thing, because whether it's virtual, even in a small group, or whether it's physically on stage in front of a group of people, I think it's really intimidating for a lot of people. You know, for most people, I think that's, they think of, you know, they have a real interesting emotion, anxious emotion tied with that. Yeah. And it, a lot of times it's negative because maybe they don't have that confidence. And if you can help them overcome that, you know, that's incredible. So you can connect with them and on that emotion and say, hey, have you been feeling this way? This is how I can help you overcome that. Then it's like, it's incredible. It's kind of seems like a slam dunk.
Yeah. Yeah. What we have to always remember, Andrew, is that no matter what, we're dealing with people, and people have feelings.
Yep.
If they have bad feelings and you can somehow provide some kind of solution that's going to lead to good feelings, as simplistic as the way I'm putting it might sound, it doesn't mean that it's not true. It's still very much the reality is that we want, as entrepreneurs and specifically as marketers, to help to transform bad feelings into good feelings. I mean, that's really what it comes down to.
I love it.
When we're successful in doing that, then the world is ours.
I love it. I love kind of boiling down complicated things into a very simple way. And that's it, really. Yeah. You really can simplify it that way. So I love it. All right. Well, next question I got for you is, when I try and create content that connects with people, and like, let's say I'm creating a video content for my, you know, some video content for my business. Yeah. And we're talking about a little bit about this offline, but I'm either scripted and I'm very prepared. I'm scripted. I've either got bullet points and I'm, you know, kind of going through the bullet points, or I'm reading right off the script because I want to make sure that I'm delivering the exact content that, you know, I want to make sure that my message is perfect and clear and, you know, concise and everything. So I either have that and then I feel kind of stiff and non-conversational, or if I go ad lib, I just kind of go off my head and I start talking about a topic, especially one that I know really well. Even when I don't know well, that's
even
bad
when you
too.
Don't, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's bad. And so like when I don't know it, then I end up like struggling to, I'm sort of working through it as I'm going, and that's bad. But if I know it really well, I'll find myself like a 2-minute video ends up being 20 minutes and because I'm just going on and on and on and on about things,
right.
Too into the weeds, and I just need to step back and I need to deliver something that really connects with people. So really tough to balance that, I think. I know I struggle with that. So as entrepreneurs, how can we deliver great content that sounds natural and that people are engaged in?
what I can offer, Andrew, is a very simple framework that becomes a basis, not just of like a 30-second elevator pitch, but could also be the basis of a talk that you give or a video that you make or anything like that. And it's a pretty simple framework. And then we can explore how to adapt that so that it's conversational and casual and all of that. And so basically what, let's look at this in the context of a 30-second elevator pitch. Someone asks, what do you do? And you just will typically just, not you, but like one will just typically rattle off, well, I'm a this and I do this, 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 and that.
Yeah.
And you think that your job is to answer the literal question that's been asked of you. But really below the surface of that question is, what can you do for me? They say, ask, what do you do? But really they're asking, what can you do for me? No one will admit to that. No one wants to think in that way, but we really are governed so much by self-interest.
Sure. Yeah.
So the idea is to have a framework that can help to meet their self-interest and also still have something about ourselves as well. And so instead of just saying, well, I'm a this and I'm a that kind of thing, you can start in the similar way that we've spoken of already. We could talk about starting with the problem that our business, our product, our service, whatever it is, solves. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the problem that we're dealing with and all of that. And then this, that's the first part. The second part is to talk about the typical flawed solutions. And what people usually do to solve this problem is that they just blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And then you move into a specific technique I teach basically all of my followers, is like a secret sauce kind of statement. The key to solving this problem is not this, but rather this. And there are lots of ways that we could use that. I call it the silver bullet. And there are lots of different ways you can say that secret sauce-like statement. Mm-hmm. But the point is just to say, the key to solving this problem is this essential thing. This is at the heart of it.
Yeah.
And then you can describe what you do in support of that idea.
Okay.
All right. So that's four parts: the problem, typical solutions, your secret sauce-like statement, and then the actual solution, like your product or service or what have you.
Okay.
And so that might sound like it's a formal speech, and it's exactly what you were concerned about, right? It's like, how do I say this in a way that I'm not just going off on some huge speech when someone just asked me casually, what do I do? And so what we can do for the first couple of parts, Andrew, is bring a conversational, interactive, and even casual quality to it.
Okay.
So say, this is the problem and this is the solution and blah, blah, blah. You could say, you know how with a product developer, how they're going to go to market and they really want that product to get a good market share, or however you might explain it, like really want that product to be successful.
Traction. Exactly. Yeah.
You do that in like more of a conversational question. You know how when a company has developed a new product, they want to get traction, they want the product to take off. It's like, oh yeah, of course. Sure. And then what they typically might do is blah, 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 blah. And they're like, yeah, sure, that makes sense. Or if they don't know about your world, it's like, yeah, I could see how that might be the case.
Yeah.
You have those first opening parts as a more casual conversational thing, and then you could bring in the secret sauce. Well, the key to doing this is not this, but actually this. And this is how we actually solve the problem. We provide a service that really gets in-depth understanding the marketplace and how to ensure success with that product moving forward.
Okay. Yeah, I love that. So you start out with identifying a problem that the person may or may not have. But either way, you're kind of talking about them before you're talking about yourself. You're not like, I do this, I do this, this, and this, and it's all about me. And yeah, because I felt like that when I'm trying to communicate what I do with people. And I've sort of worked on that elevator pitch over the years. And but in the beginning, I was rambling. I was just talking about, I develop products and then I help, with launches and that, but then I would really get into the weeds of it. And then 2 minutes later, people's eyes are glazing over and they're like, I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's, I think what I've noticed is I felt like I'm the most successful with that pitch when somebody asks follow-up questions about it. When they just move on to the next thing, I'm like, well, I didn't do that right. or they just really don't care. Like, there really isn't a good connection, but And sometimes, you know, some people, it doesn't really resonate, but a lot of people, for me, if I'm talking about launching products, they're like, I get, you know, people bring up Shark Tank a lot. They'll be like, oh man, I love that show, Shark Tank. Like that'll be the response. You know, I'm like,
yeah,
all right, well, I've explained it well enough, I guess. But you know, it's so funny that becomes the response.
Well, yeah. I'll tell you the truth, Andrew. I just went to my first live event where a bunch of people were in a room together since the pandemic started. Yeah. And what I'm supposed to say is I was such a master of my elevator speech that everyone was interested in my work.
Yeah.
And the truth is that, first of all, as a side note, I might be adaptive, like in terms of thinking of best practices around, I really believe that effective communication values the recipient over the sender. And so what that means is just like, I'm going to show up in service for the other person as much as I can. And I probably take that to an extreme where I show a lot of interest in the other person and they love talking about themselves and everyone wants to feel seen and heard.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is that a lot of people left conversations with me, not even knowing what I do because I did my job a little too well.
Right.
When people did ask me what I did, I often sensed it was kind of transactional and I would do the things and stuff. And most of the time, they didn't ask follow-up questions to your point. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, what's this guy talking about? He's the one talking about elevator pitches. He's the messaging expert and people aren't asking him follow-up questions.
Yeah.
And the truth is that it doesn't guarantee the results. Because a lot of people are just not going to want to hear about another person, period. It just happens. I want to say something different. I want something else to be true. It is hard to get some people interested unless it very specifically speaks to their particular self-interest.
But they're going through right at that moment.
Right at that moment.
People really only focused on that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the sort of thing where it might be discouraging, but then I was about to leave the final day of the event. I was going to go have a meal with a friend I had made at the event. And we were about to, she was off at the bathroom and I was doing a thing. And someone said, cause I made myself very much known over the 3 days of the event and my name kept coming up and stuff. And it's kind of that Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People kind of thing. Yeah. So my name just kept coming up throughout the thing. So people were coming up to me and just wanting to meet me. Cause like, who's this Neil guy kind of thing.
That's
and that
cool.
happened at the very end. This woman said, I haven't met you yet. And it was like, I was actually on my way out the door and we just were standing in the doorway talking and I did the thing. And she just kept texting me that night and into the next, like, so tell me more about what you do. Like she wanted my help.
Yeah.
And so she was genuinely curious in the moment. And I rewarded that curiosity with actually helping her work on a talk that she probably just gave yesterday. Now, like as of this recording,
I think
this happened and she wants my help and she wants to talk about it.
Yeah.
So it doesn't guarantee people are going to be interested, but when they are, it creates a really meaningful connection.
Very cool. Yeah. I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there too, with people wanting help. Not everybody wants help and you can't force it on them.
Right.
You can't force them to be interested. You know, you could talk to them, you know, organically for a while and like, you know, talked with them in a really genuine way for a while about what you do, what they do, about other things too, to create that kind of personal connection with them. And then at some point they might sort of loosen up or realize like, hey, yeah, maybe I actually do need some help with, you know, whatever it is with communication, public speaking. But if they're really closed off and they're not willing to, you know, there's a lot of people who aren't willing to learn, aren't willing to improve, aren't willing to say, yeah, this is actually something that I do struggle with. And so those people, you really can't force them. And it's not like you're going to get 100% close rate on everybody you talk to. That would be insane. Yeah. But if you have people who really want to learn, who want to improve, those are the key people that you really want to dial in your message to and follow up with. I love that.
Yeah. Or even just people who have a natural curiosity, which honestly, Andrew, I feel like that's one of the great poverties of our species is the lack of natural active curiosity. And that's what I want for folks in general, because I feel that their life is going to be richer if they're just more actively curious about others.
100%. Yeah. And I think about that a decent amount, actually. When we're kids, we have this natural curiosity. We're curious about everything up until even like college. You know, you just want to soak everything in. You know, you want to soak everything yeah. up. You think you really have this feeling like you're kind of invincible, that the sky is the limit, and that's all yeah. true. You don't really know what the limitations are in the world. And most of them are, you end up, most limitations you really end up putting on yourself, but you just, you know, you don't really understand how the world works yet. So, you know, when we're younger, we're a little more naive, but we're super curious. And that having some, being naive, you know, a little bit, and having that curiosity, I think helps us, you know, propel forward, because we're not worried about whether something's not going to work out. We're not as worried about failing. We want to discover new things, and somehow like that kind of gets chipped away over, you know, as we go into the professional world and you get a job and you just sort of get, I feel like a lot of people kind of get beaten down.
Yeah.
And that curiosity and that willingness to learn and adapt and grow just starts to erode away. So I think it's so important to, you know, for all of us to make sure that we're staying curious, we're staying, you know, engaged in the world and trying to have yeah. fun and trying to learn and grow. And man, and that goes back to what we talked about before about mindset and yeah. about how it's so important.
Yeah, it really does become a game changer. And yeah. there's even neuroanatomical evidence of like going from that kind of limbic or amygdala hijack kind of fight or flight kind of state into the frontal lobe, the prefrontal cortex, that yeah. I'm butchering neuroanatomy here, but getting into that reasoning center in the front of the brain and just basically being in that state of wonder mm-hmm. rather than that state of reaction. Mm-hmm. And it just, yeah. And it becomes actually a very powerful way to mitigate the reactions we have when things don't go our way.
Yeah.
And so it's not always easy to do and could take a lot of effort, but it's absolutely worth the effort in the end.
100%. Yeah. I love that. There's some really awesome advice packed in there.
Yeah.
So Neil, what's your pitch to people who need help with a pitch? Kind of a simple, straightforward question, but what's your pitch to people who need a pitch?
What most people believe a pitch needs to be is getting as much content, as much information across as possible. Mm-hmm. That the more information they provide, the more value they provide, the more likely they are to convert someone else to their way of thinking. Mm-hmm. But people aren't empowered by information. They're empowered by the belief that change is possible. And so in helping people to get a more effective pitch, what I'm essentially doing is helping them to create a strategy that helps their audience to see that the change that you're promising in your pitch will work for them. Mm-hmm. And that's what converts them at the end. They say, oh yes, I can see this. And when they can see it, that's when they're going to get on board. That's when they're going to go ahead with it. It doesn't guarantee, like we've just talked about, that everyone's going to convert.
Right.
But the people who are going to most benefit from our help are going to see the value in it because of that belief.
I love it. Yeah. Well done.
Thank you. Pitch
on what people need to have a successful pitch. I think that's, I think it's really, you know, it was nice and simple, it was nice and to the point. And it's, yeah, it is important for people to, you know, to do that, to solve. You went into the problem, talked about the sort of the secret sauce and the solution, like we had talked about before.
Right.
Yeah. And it's not just about talking to people. It's about making that connection and showing them, giving them the faith that you can solve them. First of all, that there is a solution at all, yeah. right?
Right.
It's like before you even say, hey, I can solve this problem for you,
yeah.
you're saying there is a light at the end of the tunnel for you with this problem.
Yeah.
And by the way, this is how I can help you get there. So I love that.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Cool. So what do you think the secret is? I mentioned this in the intro about you helping people get on shows like Ellen and Dr. Oz, which is pretty incredible. What's your secret to doing that? And also talked about how you help authors get larger book deals. And what's your secret to all that?
The recurring theme in so much of the content that I do in general winds up being about that secret sauce technique that I labeled as a silver bullet. Mm-hmm. In that when I would work on a proposal with a client or help them to put together their content in general, before we figured out what the chapters were going to look like and before we worked out what any given body of content was meant to be, we first figured out the larger foundational concept.
Okay.
Is to what is that driving idea that brings everything together so that when you read that in the early stage of the book or the book proposal or in the speech or whatever it is, people have that epiphanous moment. They say, oh, I get it now. I see what that is. And they have that epiphanous moment. And then that leads to them getting invested in the possibility that we have spoken of already. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, I get it. Cause that secret sauce like thing, when you look in a like a nonfiction book that's sold a lot of copies and it's in the Kindle edition and it aggregates all the most highlighted passages.
Mm-hmm.
The most highlighted passages are often the silver bullet like statement. This is the key to solving this problem most essentially.
Yeah.
Because they don't need to interpret that sentence. They suddenly get it. And so they highlight it in the Kindle because they just get it.
Yeah.
And so that winds up being how these various folks, along with having it, I mean, specifically in the book publishing world, you also need to have some kind of platform and to demonstrate to the publisher that you're going to sell copies on your own separate from the publisher's resources.
Right, right.
So that has a lot to do with it too.
Okay.
But the content itself benefits from having that distilled idea. And another thing that I teach people about specifically around book proposal and book writing is that rather than start with an abstract, like the beginning of a scientific study, you might have an abstract, like a little paragraph that says, this is what the study is about.
A hypothesis. People think,
Yeah, exactly. A synopsis. And so people think they need to have a synopsis at the beginning of their book proposal. And the book proposal is meant to show the reader of the proposal what a book is going to be. Like the idea is to convince the editor or the publisher or the agent that this is a viable book. And so instead of starting with a synopsis, mm-hmm. to start with a story, like draw them in right away. And we started with a story and one of those proposals that got that nice advance and everything was bought by HarperCollins. And the first thing the editor said on the other side of making the deal was how much he loved that opening story because it introduced the author to the reader.
That's awesome.
And so just people are most likely to integrate your content when they're emotionally invested in doing so.
Yeah, exactly.
Getting them emotionally invested right away winds up being a really important strategy in all of this. So,
and yeah, I love that. And that kind of goes back to, you know, we're talking about creativity and how, you know, how important that is to have that and how, I find myself kind of not being, I kind of write a little bit, and I'm not writing books, by the way, but like the content that I write sometimes ends up being like a little stiff and I know exactly the end I'm trying to get from A to Z and I just draw a straight line there and I forget to pull people in and, you know, put like a story behind it. Like this was my journey. I've experienced these things in a certain way and you know, this is why I'm trying to get you from point A to B. It's like when people understand, when people can connect with a story instead of just this like really, really rigid, thing or really rigid abstract concept, they're like, whatever, I don't care because it's not rooted in somebody else's story. So I love that. And actually, as we were talking, I was thinking about in college when I was writing entrance letters to, you know, to colleges, you've got that, you sort of talk about why, you know, what your journey in life has been so far and, you know, what, why you want to, sometimes they have specific questions that you have to answer, like the college entrance essay. And one of them I just wrote all about surfing. I love to surf. And I wrote about why, how surfing connects, like the lessons that we learn in surfing have a lot to do with life and, you know, patience, just waiting for waves, the commitment when you start paddling for one, for a wave, especially a bigger one, you got to have commitment. You're, if you're not going, if you hesitate for a little bit, you're going to wipe out, you know, all these different things, all these different lessons that surfing teaches us. And it was so easy for me. It was so natural. It was part of my life. And, and I wrote it, it was the easiest, most effortless college, you know, essay that I wrote. And it was funny because I didn't 100% care whether or not I got into that school that I was writing the essay for. And so I didn't really, I didn't care that I was writing this perfect professional, you know, trying to dial in exactly what they wanted to hear and explain to them why I wanted to go to their, you know, college, which I was kind of doing more for other colleges that I was really, you know, kind of desperate to get into. But this one, I just wrote really from the heart, and I wrote this story, and I got into that college. And not only that, but they wrote a letter about how in the acceptance letter, they actually included how much they loved that, that essay.
Really?
Yeah.
It wasn't
just
a form acceptance letter. That's amazing, Andrew.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so cool.
Right. And it was just, it was, I was totally unexpected. I thought no serious college is going to care about an essay about surfing.
Yeah.
But they did, because it was, you know, it was just, it was personal. It was a story. It was something that people can relate to, even if, you know, not even like everyone who read that at the, at that college, I mean, none of them may have surfed, you know, none of them have, they might not even be like outdoor sport enthusiasts even, but I think everybody can relate to that. Right. So, so it's really important, and it's something that I think we all have to kind of remember, that that stories and writing and just creating content from the heart and being real and raw and, you know, getting it out there and speaking from our experiences, it's what people want to hear, you know, and it really draws them in and connects us with them.
No matter what, Andrew, we are always dealing with a person who is feeling one way or another in the experience of their own life.
Yeah.
And if you create something that positively impacts that experience fundamentally.
Yeah.
That's just the foundation of everything else that follows, no matter what we're doing.
Yeah.
No matter what.
That's awesome.
Exactly what you did with that essay, that you helped them to feel something desirable in the experience of their life because of what you offered to them.
Yep. Man, as I'm getting pretty excited as we're talking, I'm thinking about all these different things I can start to implement right away. And hopefully our listeners are kind of getting excited too about the, you know, the different strategies, tactics, and that they can implement in their business and just being more creative is definitely been a common theme here. So as we end here, if you could, Neil, if you could only focus on one thing in entrepreneurship, what would that be?
I would spend the rest of my years helping each expert, each visionary, each entrepreneur to step into that secret sauce, like silver bullet, like statement, and take full ownership of that idea, the thing that defines their special take on something.
Yeah.
And I remember working with one gentleman who had hired me for public speaking, and then the pandemic happened. So a month after the pandemic started in April of 2020, he retained my help in figuring out how to express the unique value of his program on giving corporate feedback. And we found that secret sauce like statement. And in his testimonial, he said he made multiple five-figure deals in the months that followed.
Wow.
And the it's private, like what the number wound up being, but the idea is that he made multiple five-figure deals, and it's more than the money, Andrew. It's more that he took such clear and distinct ownership of his value in the world.
Mm-hmm.
That ownership came across, which is really the reason why he had so much success with it. Yeah. And so to help eradicate imposter syndrome in another human, so they say, this is my value and I have a voice and I'm going to share it with whoever is open to receiving it.
Yeah,
that's a game changer. That changes the trajectory of a life. If I could spend the rest of my life just doing that for people, that would be a really good life, well lived.
That's incredible. It's such an important thing. And you mentioned imposter syndrome, which is something we've talked about here on the show before. But it's something that as entrepreneurs, I think we all feel. And yeah. In order, you know, and to get over that is massive, massive, and how you perceive your business, but more importantly, how other people perceive you and your business yeah. and what you do, because it's so easy to kind of be like, oh man, I don't know. I'm just going to put this out there. I think people will want it. I hope they want it. You know, I'm like pretty good at this, but you know, I hope it connects with people. And then it's so easy for, like, people are really smart. Customers are really smart in general, you know, and they'll sniff out very quickly whether or not you're really good at what you do or whether you're really confident in yeah. what you do. And if you can yeah. just have that confidence, like, none of us are perfect. We don't know all the answers. You know, I don't have all the answers about product development and product launch. Yeah, I don't know everything. That would be insane right. if I did. Nobody, you know, right? And like, there's things that we can all learn in our business and we can all improve on. And I think, you know, getting a grip on that and feeling comfortable with that is a good first step, because we realize that no, people aren't expecting us to be perfect, but they do expect us to be confident in solving their problem, or at least working really hard to solve their problem.
Yeah.
I love that. That really changes businesses. That I know for me, that kind of working to get over, haven't even in some aspects, I haven't even gotten there, getting completely over imposter syndrome, you know, in certain ways and certain aspects yeah. of my business. But working to get over that and being more confident has made all the difference in the world. So you helping other entrepreneurs do that, it's incredible.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that very much. And it's something that is actually far more possible than some folks who are struggling might actually think.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome, Neil. Well, it's really been a pleasure. Really appreciate you being on the show today.
Well, it's been a great time, Andrew. I appreciate you having me.
Absolutely. Thank you all so much for listening to That Entrepreneur Life. To learn more about what Neil is working on, what's your best way for people to find you, Neil?
You can just find me on my website, neilcanhelp.com, N-E-I-L, canhelp.com, and we just go from there.
Perfect. Yeah, go check it out. And if you like what you heard today, please subscribe to our podcast and don't forget to download our free ebook about the success mindset at thatentrepreneurlife.com. Thanks for everyone for your continued support of what we do as entrepreneurs. And don't forget to join us next week for another episode of That Entrepreneur Life. Awesome, man. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to That Entrepreneur Life podcast. Be sure to visit thatentrepreneurlife.com to join the conversation, access our show notes, and discover our fantastic bonus content. Don't forget to join us next week for another episode as we continue to add value. Until next time.